And my wife, Roiza, went to the castle and she ended up marrying the Duke's son. And our little baby, Yaakov, now got the name Jacob and he doesn't even know he's a Jew. And finally, when he started making trouble for Jews, after his father passed away and he became the new Duke, I started having terrible, terrible suffering in Gan Eden from it. And I was so sad that my own son is causing trouble for Jews. And they came to me in Gan Eden, the Balachim, and they said, "You're the father of Yaakov Barthalem." I said, "Yes." They said, the Malachim said, "You cannot stay here in Gan Eden when your son is making so much trouble for Jews. You have to go down into the world and you have to do something about it to stop it." So the Malachim took me out of Gan Eden. They threw me out of Gan Eden and they sent me down to the world and they said, "You have to help and do something about it." I said, "What should I do?" I didn't know what to do. So what did I do? I went to the castle. Of course, I didn't have a body. I wasn't a person. I was a neshama that was thrown out of Gan Eden. I went to the castle. My son, Jacob Barthalem, was sleeping in his bed, Yaakov Barthalem. And when he fell asleep at night and he started dreaming, I climbed into his dreams. I tried to get into his dreams and I said, my son, Yaakov Barthalem." And Yaakov Barthalem would all of a sudden think about his father, who was the Duke. Remember the Duke? We now have a few Dukes in the story. The old Duke who was stolen by the Jews. His son, who was the Duke's son that we called, right? And then Jacob Barthalem was a new Duke. Now, the middle Duke, the son of the old Duke, had told Yaakov, Jacob Barthalem, that he's the father, right? And Yaakov Barthalem never knew his father was really a Yid. So when the real father, Yitzchak Ben Aaron Alevi, is coming in a dream and he's saying, "I'm your father," so right away, little Yaakov Barthalem, Yaakov Barthalem is thinking about the Duke who is his father, but it wasn't his father. But Yitzchak Ben Aaron Levi says, "I am your real father. I have come from the other world to tell you that your father was not the Duke who told you he was your father, but it's really me, Yitzchak Ben Aaron Levi, who is a Jew. Your mother is also a Jew. And you are also a Jew. And if you check to see that you have a bris milah, you will understand that you're a Jew." Now, in those days, the goyim did not make a bris milah, or they call it a circumcision. In these days, as we know, even non-Jews will make what's called a circumcision in the hospital. So it looks like a bris milah, and they do it for health reasons. In those days, the goyim didn't do it. Only the Jews did it. The way you could really tell the difference between a Jew and a Goy, a Jew had a bris milah, and a Goy did not. I mean, of course, that's not the only way you could tell the difference, but that was a very, very important way to make a difference between a Jew and a Goy. And the father says, Yitzchak Ben Aaron Levi says, "If you check yourself, you'll see you have a bris milah like all the Jews. Please stop being mean to the Jews. You are a Jew yourself. You have only been taught that way by teachers that did not like Jews. But you yourself are a Jew. Please leave the Jews alone." And Jacob Barthalem would wake up and he would remember the dream and he'd say, "I had a dream. I'm not going to listen to my dream. Just a dream. Some ridiculous dream." And the next night, his father would come again into the dream. And he would wake up and he would say, "I'm not going to listen to the dream." And the next night he would come again in the dream. Each night the father would come to his son in the dream. The son did not pay attention to the dream. And now, Kinalach, Yitzchak ben Aaron Alevi is in the dream of the Maharal. And he says, I tried to go back in Gan Eden. They wouldn't let me in. I tried to go into the dream of my son. He wouldn't listen to me. I was going back and forth, and I didn't know what to do. He says, but the last time I was in Gan Eden, and they wouldn't let me in, they said, you should know one thing. There's a tzaddik in the world, and he has the power to be able to help, and his name is the Maharal of Prague. Go to the Maharal of Prague. Now it seems in his time the Maharal wasn't alive. Yitzchak ben Aaron Alevi was before the Maharal. But they told him, go to Prague to the Maharal and ask him for the help. He's the only one that will be able to help now. And so Yitzchak ben Aaron Alevi continues and he says, please Maharal, please help. Now the next morning the Maharal woke up and he remembered the dream. And now he wants to check out to see if this is a real dream or maybe not a real dream. He calls in special people and he says, find out if there was ever in the yeshiva in Prague many years ago a Talmud Chochem named Yitzchak ben Aaron Alevi, and if he married the daughter of somebody named Reb Moshe, who was called Reb Moshe Possessor, who lived in a village that's a few miles away from Prague, that there's a duke. Find out all of these things. Akinalach, the special people that the Maharal trusted with special things like this, they went and asked around the people that they have to find out and look where they can find things out. And they came back to the Maharal and they said, yes, there was such a Talmud Chochem named Yitzchak ben Aaron Alevi many years ago, and he married the daughter of Reb Moshe, a possessor who lived in the village of the duke. And so the Maharal saw that was really a real dream, that this neshama came from Gan Eden. And now he came up with a plan. Who is ready for the plan of the Maharal? Okay. He called now other people to go find out certain things about the duke now, who was making trouble for the Jews. One of the things they found out, that every Sunday, the duke goes in his special, beautiful wagon, and he goes to church. Where does he go to church? In Prague. Now, if it was the big green church of Tadus or not, the story doesn't say. The fact was, he went on the road all the way from the castle to Prague every Sunday in his beautiful wagon with his horses to go to church. This is what the Maharal did. The Maharal now, of course, knew that this Yitzchak ben Aaron Alevi had come several times to Jacob Bartholomew in a dream, and Jacob Bartholomew did not listen. In other words, he just pushed it off and didn't believe in his dream. Now, the Maharal calls in the Goylam, Yassel Goylam, and he says to Yassel Goylam, I'm sending you now to do a special thing. You will deliver a letter that I'm going to write. The Maharal sat down by his desk. He took the paper and the pen or the feather, whatever they had in those days, and he starts writing this letter. Who wants to hear the letter? Okay. To my dear son, Yaakov, who people call Jacob, I am your father, Yitzchak ben Aaron Halevi. I have come to you several times in your dream, but you did not listen or pay attention. And you keep telling yourself that it's nothing. This time, I am now sending you this letter, and I'm delivering it to you from myself, from the other world. And maybe if you see in the letter, it's written right in front of you, you will believe what I'm saying. Because you will have the letter right there, and it's not a dream that can just go away. My son, you are really my son, and not the son of the Duke Bartholomew. My name again is Yitzchak ben Aaron Alevi. I am a Jew. Your mother's name is really Roiza Bas Moshe. She's also a Jew. And that makes you also a Jew, even though you never knew that you were a Jew. And you never knew who your real father was. Your grandfather, who they call your grandfather, the Duke, loved Jews. And your stepfather, who was not really your father, also was very nice to the Jews. You, being a Jew yourself, are being very mean to the Jews. It is only because your father was afraid that you would become a Duke as a Jew. That you would become too friendly to the Jews. And therefore he hired Jew-hating teachers, anti-Semites, to poison your mind, and that's why you're doing what you're doing. Please, be nice to the Jews, and don't drive them away from their homes. It's only because of what has been put into your head. And if you don't believe anything that I'm telling you now, just check it out with your own mother and ask her if it's really true, who your father was and still is, and who your mother is. And she will be able to explain to you everything. And if you have any questions, go to the rabbi in Prague. His name is the Maharal, and he will be able to help in any situation that you need. Signed, your father, Yitzchak ben Aaron Alevi. The Maharal took this letter. He folded it up, put it into a special envelope. And he gave the goyim a special necklace that when you wear this necklace, it's Royeh Ve'enoi Nireh. You could see, but nobody could see you. You are not seen. You are invisible. You become invisible. Yes. And now, Kinalach, the Maharal said, on Sunday morning, when Jacob Barthalem goes to church in the wagon, you will be on the road, and you will go, of course, invisibly. He won't be able to see you. And you will put this letter on his lap. And all of a sudden, of course, he will be discovering this letter out of nowhere. Kinalach, Sunday morning, Jacob Barthalem went into his special wagon with the horses, with the driver, and they're going down the road from the castle all the way to Prague to go to his church. And the goyim is waiting by the road, and he puts on the necklace and he disappears. And then all of a sudden, as the Duke is looking at the beautiful birdies and trees and going down the road, all of a sudden he feels something like landing on his lap. Of course, the goyim had run very fast and just put it right there, and he goes away and goes back to the Maharal in Prague. And all of a sudden he looks down and he sees an envelope and his name, the Duke Jacob Barthalem, an envelope out of nowhere. He says, where did this come from? I didn't have this in the wagon when I left my castle. It looks like it just all of a sudden came out of nowhere. And he opens it up and he reads the letter. And of course he starts to shake because he remembers his dreams. And all of a sudden he knew that something real was going on. And he tells his driver, don't go now while we're going to church. Turn around and go back to the castle. I have to speak to my mother. And the driver turns around the wagon. They go back to the castle. And now he goes to his old mother. He goes to his old mother. And he says, Mother, I have to ask you something. In fact, maybe I should show you this letter. And in fact, it did say in the letter that he should even show his mother the letter. And he's shaking. And all of a sudden, his mother reads the letter. And of course, she cries and shakes because this is all true. This was her husband, Yitzchak ben Aaron Alevi. This is the father of Jacob, her son. And she tells him for the first time, yes, this was your father. And yes, I am your mother, I'm Jewish, and yes, you're born a Jewish boy, and yes, the Duke was not really your father. And all of a sudden now, he He shakes and she shakes and they're crying. He finds out now something that all along was true that he never knew. Kenalach. Yaakov Barthalem. Let's call him now Yaakov. He sent his beautiful wagon with the horses with a messenger to the home of the Maharal. And he wrote a letter and he says, please come to my castle. I must see you. It's very important. And of course the Maharal knew that his plan was working because the Duke wants to see him. Kenalach, the Maharal went with the wagon to the castle of the Duke. He got there in the middle of the day and he stayed for 24 hours. 24 hours he stayed in the castle of the Duke with Yaakov Barthalem and his mother, Roiza Bas Moshe. What happened there? The Maharal never wanted to tell anyone. The only things we know, and this is of course the end of the story, is that when the Maharal came back to Prague, the Maharal returned with a very large sum of money and he opened up a yeshiva called Yeshivas Beis Yaakov. Why was it called Beis Yaakov? Because Yaakov Barthalem, that was his name, he wanted his name to be on a yeshiva, a place to learn Torah. Now, if he now gave his money to open up a yeshiva in Prague to learn Torah, do you think he was going on in his mean ways, or do you think he was doing tshuva? What do you think?
Doing tshuva.
No, he was doing tshuva. From that day on, the Duke, Jacob Barthalem, that of course nobody knew he was a Jew, except now for his mother and the Maharal. From that day on, Jacob Barthalem was friendly to the Jews. He, of course, canceled his decree to throw them out of their houses. And he said they could stay in their houses. And whatever rent they were paying, he took off a lot of the rent and charged them much less money. And he was very nice and friendly. And, Kindalach, when it came the end of his life, and when it came the end of his mother's life, both of them, they had a problem, of course, before they passed away, that they took care of before they passed away. They said like this, nobody knows that we're really Jews. And it seems, according to Halacha, there was also certain problems, if they, chas v'shalom, converted or not, or whatever the case may be, you could ask by a Rav, or study Shulchan Aruch. But the problem was, when they pass away, where will they be buried? They did not want to be buried in a Goyish graveyard. After all, they're not Goyim. After all, they're Jews. Apparently, because of certain problems, they could not be buried in a Jewish Yiddish Beis HaKfaris. They could not be buried in a Jewish graveyard. Where will they be buried? They did not want to be buried, chas v'shalom, in a Goyish graveyard, as everybody had thought they were Goyim. And apparently there were certain problems about being buried in a Jewish graveyard. So what did they do? They went now to the park in front of the castle. As I told you in the beginning of this story, there was a lake. And there was a little island on the lake. They built that little palace with the high, pointy top. And they prepared two places, two graves. And when the mother, Roiza Bas Moshe, passed away, she was buried there. And later on, when Yaakov, who everybody thought was Jacob Barthalem, passed away, he was buried there next to his mother. So they didn't have the problem, chas v'shalom, to be buried in a non-Jewish Beis HaKfaris. And apparently to this day, this little palace is there in that park. And if you see it, you'll know the story of why those two graves are in there. Long time ago was a very great king. But the king was getting old. What happens when a king gets old? He gets older. What happens when he gets very old? He gets very, very old. And after a while, of course, the king, since he's a person, will pass away. Now this king knows that to be a good king is not only when he's alive, but he has to make sure there's going to be a good king when he's not going to be around anymore, and another king will sit on his throne. And he wants to make sure the best king will sit on the throne when he passes away. And this king had three sons. He would like one of his sons to be the new king. But it's not necessarily the oldest son. Which son do you think would become the best king? The oldest son or the wisest son? The wisest and smartest son will be the king. Shh! It might be the oldest, it might be the youngest, it might be the middlest. The main thing is to see which one is the wisest. Now, each one of the three sons of the king was a very good boy, and very smart and very wise. But the king wanted to find out which one was the wisest, because there can only be one new king. And so the king called his three sons to his throne one day when he was very, very, very old. And the king decided he's going to make a contest. And each boy will have the same fair chance at the contest. And whoever will do the best in this contest will be chosen to be the new king. And this is the contest, as the king explained to his three sons. He said, "Under the palace is a very big empty room. Sometimes I use it to keep things in, like boxes or wine or things that are kept there for a while, but it was never really used for anything special for any long time. It was usually a big empty room. And now it's all completely empty and very big." Imagine this lunchroom, completely empty. No tables, no benches, no food, no boxes. Nothing, just a big empty room. This is the kind of room that was under the palace. And the king said, "Each one of you will get a chance, and the chance will be for 30 days, to fill the room as full as you can get it with something that will fill the room the most. You will figure out what you want to fill the room with. And whoever gets it the fullest in 30 days will be the new king when I pass away. So you will figure out how to fill up that room with something in 30 days. And whoever fills it the fullest will be the new king." Well, Kenalach, the oldest was given the first chance. And he left the king's throne, he left his father's throne, and he started to figure out right away, "I've got to get busy. 30 days is a long time, but I have to use my time out. I have to use it well. I have to fill up that big room. What am I going to do?" He starts thinking, "In the kingdom are many, many rocks, big rocks and gigantic stones and boulders and all kinds of rocks. I will get my servants," you know, this prince, this son of the king had his own servants, and he had permission to use soldiers if he wants or anybody that he wants. He doesn't have to do it just by himself. He can have other people help him. And he got strong servants, and he got officers, and he got soldiers. And he says, "Let's get rocks." And they start getting wagons with horses, with strong cows. And they start going out into the countryside and into the places where there are rocks. And they start picking up rocks, putting them on the wagons, or going to the Rocky Mountains with axes and picks, those metal things on the wood, and chopping rocks and putting them on the wagons. And now the horses and the strong cows are pulling the wagons full of rocks, and the strong men are lifting them up, taking the rock off the wagon, into the palace, to the stairs, going down, down, down to the big room, and boom, they put in a rock. And boom, they put in another rock, and a big boulder and another big stone, and they're filling up that room with rocks. And it's a big noise and a big tumult, rolling and throwing and pushing and knocking. But day by day, even at night, they're working and schwitzing and sweating and huffing and puffing. And so many strong men with ropes, with their hands, with using gloves and all kinds of tools and pushing rocks. And the prince, the oldest son of the king, of course, was in charge, and he's watching as everybody's working. And he sees that in between two big rocks in the room is a space. He says, I have to fill up the space with more rocks. So he gets smaller rocks and he pokes it in between the cracks and the spaces. But between those two rocks are also smaller spaces. So he gets littler rocks and puts it in and pokes it in. And then in between those spaces are other spaces. And he gets little teeny weeny pebbles and rocks and he puts them in. And this is going on for 30 days. And it came the end of the 30th day. And of course the trumpets blow, pee, 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 pee. The king is coming to see the big room. And the king comes down the hall at the end of the 30th day. And they open the door to the big room. And the king looks in and he has a big smile. And he sees that the whole room is filled with rocks and stones and pebbles. And the king says, my son, you have done a great job, a very big job. You have worked very hard. You have filled the room with rocks. But it's not exactly all 100% completely filled, because between the rocks, between the big, big rocks are spaces. And the boy says, but father, between the spaces I put stones. Yes, but between the stones is also spaces. Yes, but father, between the stones I put little rocks. And the father says, yes, but between the little rocks are little spaces. But you've done a wonderful job. And that was the end of the first part of the contest. And now the trumpets blow, pee, 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 pee. Two reasons. The king is leaving, and they have to get all the officers and army men and all of these servants to clear out the room, because the second son has to have his chance to fill the room. And if it's already full of rocks, I mean, he's not going to have his chance. And so now they clear out the room from the big gigantic rocks and the smaller rocks and the stones and the boulders and the pebbles. And it's a big tumult and a big gigantic noise and a big schleppinish. And they're schlepping things out, and it's a big, big echo in the palace with all these banging rocks and smashing, and back to the wagons and the men schlepping them and lifting them. And after a few days, or maybe it took a few weeks, they emptied out the room, and now it's all empty. They swept it out from the sand that was left and the dirt, and now the room is completely empty. And now starts part two of the contest, the second son. Now, of course, the second son was there when the first son had his part of the contest, and he heard his father, the king, say that even though the room is filled with rocks, there's still spaces. So the second son knows that if he wants to do better than the first son, his brother, he's got to do something about those spaces. And he's got to fill even those spaces. So he decided to fill the room, not with rocks, but with something else. And now starts part two of the contest, and the king is there, and the second son, and the first son, and the third son are all there, and people that want to see, and officers, and all kinds of important people. And the trumpets blow, but of course it's different kind of trumpets. And the second part of the contest starts, and the king says, "Son, you have 30 days to fill the room." And this son also had his servants and his officers and his helpers. And he says, "We are going to fill the room with feathers."